This is Audible.
Unlimited memory. How to use advanced learning strategies to learn faster, remember more, and be more productive. Written by Grandmaster Kevin Horsley. Copyright 2013-2014 by Kevin Horsley. All rights reserved. Published by TCK Publishing. TCKPublishing.com. Narrated by Dan Culhane. Audiobook production by Archangel Inc. Note to listener. Using visualization can help improve your memory. That's why this audiobook comes with a free PDF companion document, including all the pictures, charts, and visual information that are included in the print and ebook versions of this book. You should receive a free copy of this PDF companion document wherever you purchased this audiobook. If you did not receive the PDF companion document, you can download it for free from my website at www.supermemory.co.za/audiobook. Memory is a way of holding on to the things you love, the things you are, the things you never want to lose. That's a quote from The Wonder Years. Chapter 1, Introduction. Here's a quote from Brian Tracy. The great breakthrough in your life comes when you realize that you can learn anything you need to learn to accomplish any goal that you set for yourself. This means there are no limits on what you can be, have, or do. What would your life be like if you could learn and remember information easily, quickly, and effectively? Think about it. In this audiobook, I'll provide you with a set of powerful memory-enhancing mindsets and skills, which will allow you to take control of your learning and your life. You'll discover many amazing methods, both ancient and new, that have been modeled from the world's best minds in the areas of accelerated learning and memory development. This book will give you information that school forgot to teach you. The approach is all about running your own brain. I believe that this can only be possible with the foundation of memory. Imagine if you were born without a memory. Who would you be? You'd be nothing. If you didn't have a memory, you don't have anything else. If I ask you, who are you? You would immediately start rearranging memories in your mind to answer that question. Your memory is the glue that binds your life together. Everything you are today is because of your amazing memory. You are a data-collecting being, and your memory is where your life is lived. If you didn't have a memory, you wouldn't be able to learn, think, have intelligence, create, or even know how to tie your shoes. You wouldn't be able to build experience in any field because experience is just a collection of memories after all. Only if you can remember information can you live it. Over the years, memory has been given a bad name. It's been associated with rote learning and cramming information into your brain. Educators have said that understanding is the key to learning, but how can you understand something if you can't remember it? We've all had this experience. We recognize and understand information, but can't recall it when we need it. For example, how many jokes do you know? You've probably heard thousands, but you can only recall about 4 or 5 right now. There's a big difference between remembering your 4 jokes and recognizing or understanding thousands. Understanding doesn't create use. Only when you can instantly recall what you understand and practice using your remembered understanding do you achieve mastery. Memory means storing what you've learned. Otherwise, why would we bother learning in the first place? Some people say you don't need a good memory in the Google age. Ken Jennings said, "When you make a decision, you need facts. If those facts are in your brain, they're at your fingertips. If they're all in Google somewhere, you may not make the right decision on the spur of the moment." Which raises the question, would or have you hired a person for his or her ability to Google information? No. You want people with information and experience at their fingertips. You want confident people, people that are certain about what they know. Not storing information in your mind is expensive and can lead to embarrassment and poor judgment. If you have to continually refer to notes or manuals to do your work, you'll waste time and look unprofessional. Would you rather buy a product from someone that forgets your name or from someone that remembers it? Would you allow a doctor to operate on you if she had to continually refer to a manual or an iPad? Definitely not. Memory is the cornerstone of our existence. It determines the quality of our decisions and therefore our entire life. Learning and memory are the two most magical properties of the human mind. Learning is the ability to acquire new information, and memory holds that new information in place over time. Memory is the foundation to all learning. If memory is not set in place, all you're doing is throwing information into a deep hole, never to be used again. The problem is that many people are not recalling what they know, and they are constantly learning and forgetting, and learning and forgetting, and learning and forgetting. When you improve your memory, you improve everything. You can access information more quickly and more easily, creating greater opportunities for connections and associations. The more facts and memories that you have properly stored in your brain, the more potential you have to make unique combinations and connections. An increased memory also enhances basic intelligence, because intelligence is based on all of the events, people, and facts that you can recall. The more you remember, the more you can create and do, because factual knowledge always precedes skill. Information can only be built into more information, so the more you know, the easier it is to get to know more. Now, with your memory, you have two choices. The first choice is that your memory cannot be improved. You can do nothing to make any difference to your inborn ability. Many people choose this as their life's choice because, through the thousands of hours of schooling, not one hour is spent on showing you how your amazing memory can be made better. School never told you anything about your amazing brain. When I was 8 years old, a school psychologist gave me a bit of advice about my brain. He said, I may have a form of brain damage, and he wanted to send me to a special class. I was a classic dyslexic. I wasn't born with a good memory, and I couldn't concentrate. Reading and writing were always a challenge for me. Throughout my school career, I learned by having my mother and friends read the syllabus to me. I forced myself to memorize it, and what I didn't get, which was most of it, I just didn't get. I had no future because I just couldn't grasp what was being taught to me. In 12 years of school, I couldn't read a book from cover to cover alone, and in my final year of school, I still couldn't read much better than when I started out in first grade. To cut a long story short, I somehow managed to graduate from high school in 1989. A couple of years later, my life was changed when I was walking through a local bookstore. Up until that point, I had not read a book from cover to cover by myself, but that night, I decided to buy 3 books. They were all written by Tony Buzan. The first book was Use Your Head. The second, Use Your Memory. And the third, the speed reading book. Back then, I honestly thought I would begin with the speed reading book and then read the other two quickly. However, it didn't work out that way. I started reading Use Your Memory and discovered that we all have a second choice. This choice is, our memory is just a habit, and habits can be improved with the right kind of training and practice. I discovered that there are basic fundamentals to memory improvement, and that if we apply them consistently, we'll get the same results that great memory masters do. If we don't, we won't. I started studying psychology and anything I could get my hands on in the areas of the brain, mind, and memory. I studied hundreds of books and tapes, and I also interviewed people with great memories. Through this long journey, I overcame all of my dyslexic issues and took myself to a point where I was reading and taking in, on average, 4 books a week. I could learn in an hour what took the average person months to master. In 1995, I decided to compete in the World Memory Championships. This is an event that attracts the best memory masters from around the world, and the competition tests every facet of memory. That year, I managed to come 5th overall, having won 2nd place in the written word event. This was proof that I had overcome all of my dyslexic challenges. I was also awarded the title International Grand Master of Memory by the Brain Trust, a title which was presented and jointly sanctioned by His Serene Highness Prince Philip of Liechtenstein on October 26, 1995, at Hanbury Manor in Ware, Hertfordshire, England. Considering my past difficulties and from where I had come, this was a great achievement. From that day on, I knew my life had changed direction, and it would never be the same again. In 1999, I decided to stretch myself and test my abilities even more when I broke the world record that has been called the Everest of memory tests. I memorized the first 10,000 digits of pi. Pi has passed every test of randomness and has no known limit. The first 10,000 digits of pi are divided into 2,000 five-digit groups. The testers would randomly call out any one of these five-digit sequences, and I had to reply with the five-digit number on either side of the number chosen. This happened 50 times. The record was for the time taken to complete the test. I broke the previous record by 14 minutes. Why did I do it, you ask? Mainly because people said it was impossible to do. And that's what my life is all about, breaking limitations and showing people what our memories are capable of. Ever since then, I've been training, teaching, and coaching people to remember key information that they need for their lives, and that the joy of learning is available to all of us. Many people say I have a photographic memory, but that's not true. I've just discovered many secrets about memory, and I've been able to use and make these methods my own. Now, I didn't tell you all this to impress you, but to impress the point that every person has the same potential to master his or her memory. It doesn't matter where you come from. All that matters is where you're going. However, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten. You need to do different to get different. Thus, a word of warning. Mastering your memory is going to require a different kind of thinking. Don't judge or look for perfection from this book. Rather, look for value. When you judge information, you stop yourself from learning it. You can judge the methods. You can criticize them. You can try another approach. But I promise you, you will not be able to get the same results as us memory masters without applying these principles. I ask you to listen with an open mind. I have no doubt that everything that you will learn in this book works and works amazingly well. The methods that I'll share with you are the same methods that memory masters use. This is the strategy. This book is broken up into three sections covering the four keys, or C's, to improving your memory. The first section talks about improving your concentration. The second section is about improving your ability to create imagery and connecting concepts together. And the final key is about creating a habit with continuous use. These four C's are the solution to any memory problem that you have or will face in the future. Some of the examples that I've used in this book come from personal development and business books. So not only will you learn to improve your memory, but you'll also learn some key concepts that you can use for your personal development. I'll teach you to transform bland information into something that is real and well organized. This, in turn, means the information has meaning and will then be used instead of being discarded. I'm not talking about rote learning, but a way to store information differently with far better results. The goal is to improve learning and understanding. There are many books out there that do a lot of talking before you find any meat. This book is different. I want to get straight to the point and save you a lot of time and energy. It's my goal to show you the wonderful world of memory improvement in a way I wish someone would have taught me. Don't just read this book. Play with the concepts and make it part of your thinking and your life. If you're ready, then let's go to the first lesson and unleash the power of your memory. Part 1. Concentrate. The best advice I ever came across on the subject of concentration is, wherever you are, be there. That's a quote from Jim Rohn. Chapter 2. Excuse Me. It begins with a quote from Zig Ziglar. You cannot fly with the eagles if you continue to scratch with the turkeys. Before we begin, what excuses are you going to make for not listening to this whole book? If you decide to listen to the whole book, what excuses are you going to make for not using the information that you're going to learn? I know you don't know what you'll be learning, but you have those excuses all lined up, don't you? Take time to really think about your excuses or write them down. These are the same excuses that you use every time to stop yourself from learning anything new. You can have success or excuses, but you can't have them both. People that learn quickly only focus on the information and skills that matter. Excuses don't matter, and they're thought viruses. The only things that are keeping you from getting what you want in your life are the excuses you keep telling yourself. Who would you be without your excuses? Think about it. Every excuse you accept makes you weaker. Excuses stop you from concentrating and paying attention. When you excuse yourself from learning something new, you block your focus and your energy. Always remember that where your attention goes, your energy flows. Some of the most common excuses that people use to give away their power are, number one, I'm helpless. I'm not smart enough. But it's not my nature. I don't have the time to practice the information. Time is always there. You just need to schedule it. I don't have the right genes to have a good memory. Well, how do you really know that? I'm getting older. I can't do anything about my memory. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, then it's a good thing you're not a dog. Number two is someone else is to blame. My parents always said that I was stupid. I need support to develop these skills. It's the book's fault. I need to experience it in a seminar. It's impossible to have a negative emotion without blaming someone or something. Free your mind. You always have two choices with your life and experience. You can either learn from it, or you can place blame. The choice is always yours. Number three, too much stress. There's just too much to learn. I have to change my way of thinking. The book requires me to do too much. It'll be difficult. We excuse ourselves into living mediocre lives. We explain why we can't do this or that. We excuse ourselves from taking responsibility. Decide now to stop giving away your power to your excuses. Are your excuses true? Are you 100% certain that they're true? Do any of your excuses really enhance and empower your life? You're more than your excuses, aren't you? Drop them now. Richard Bach said, "Argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours." The only cause for not doing something with the information in this book is you. Nobody else but you. You are responsible for your learning. The person that has the most to do with what happens to you is you. If you believe your limits, your life will be very limited. Improving your memory and concentration is not only about what you need to do more of, it's also about what you need to do less of. It's amazing how quickly you can learn a new skill when you decide to let go of your excuses, judgments, and complaints. If you consistently change your approach and increase your desire to learn this information, you'll master it. Take action now. Number one, if you continue to hold on to your excuses, what would your life be like 5 years from now? Two, who would you be without your excuses? Enter all learning with this new mindset. Number three, remember they are just excuses. It's not the truth. Change them now. Number four, what is more important to you, excusing yourself from experiencing your potential or being the best that you can be? And number five, why is it important for you to learn to empower your memory? Think about it and write down as many reasons as you can to create a big why. As Darren Hardy says, we need why power, not willpower. Chapter 3. Never Believe a Lie. The mind is the limit. As long as the mind can envision the fact that you can do something, you can do it. As long as you believe 100%. That's a quote from Arnold Schwarzenegger. There was once a fish that lived in a pond. One day he met another fish that used to live in the sea. The pond fish asked, "What's the sea?" And the sea fish said, "It's this vast amount of water that's a million, million times bigger than your pond." The pond fish never talked to the sea fish again because he thought the sea fish was a liar. What can we learn from this? Your beliefs of what your concentration and memory can do may be your own limited version of the truth. Many people never get a taste of their true potential because they have decided to entertain only a limited view of what they can do. What if your negative beliefs about your concentration, your memory, and your potential were not true at all? Who would you be without these beliefs? Richard Bandler said, "Beliefs aren't about truth. Beliefs are about believing. They're guides for our behavior." We always defend what we believe. If you believe you have a bad memory, you'll always act and think in accordance with that belief. Where your attention goes, your energy flows. If you want to improve your memory and concentration, you need to create a belief system that supports them. Imagine there's an Earth 1 and an Earth 2. The planets are the same in every way, but they're in different dimensions. On Earth 1 lives Mr. A, and on Earth 2 lives Mr. B. They look the same, they speak the same way, they live in the same environment, they have the same education, and they even have the same brain and nervous system. Everything is the same. There is only one thing that separates them. Mr. A believes that he has a terrible memory. He always tells people, "My attention's all over the place. It's like a kangaroo hopping around in my mind. I'm always forgetting things. I'm terrible with names. My memory is getting worse every day. My memory's full. My memory's like a sieve. I'm stupid. Your brain will fill up, so don't learn too much." Mr. A hates learning. He's not interested in remembering because he thinks he'll forget. Mr. B believes he has a wonderful memory. In fact, an exceptional memory. He always says, "I choose to focus my attention. It's like a laser beam. Memory improvement is important. Look how much I remember. I have quadrillions of memories stored in my mind." My memory's getting better and better every day. I'm interested in remembering names. I'm brilliant. My memory has the ability to store and recall mountains of information. It's the only container with this characteristic. The more I put into it, the more it'll hold. Mr. B loves learning. He wants to remember and train his mind. Now, who do you think will have the better memory? Of course, Mr. B. The only difference between Mr. A and Mr. B is their beliefs. Whose beliefs do you think are right? The answer is that they're both right. It's only our thinking that makes things right or wrong. Mr. A and Mr. B both have beliefs, and they both have experiences or thoughts to back it up. The only difference is that Mr. A's focus is negative and disempowering. He sets himself up to fail. Mr. B's focus is positive and empowering. He sets himself up for success. Both Mr. A and Mr. B choose their own beliefs. It isn't an outside influence that determines their outcome. We all have the freedom to choose what we focus on. And in the end, it will determine the beliefs we carry around with us. A belief is a sense of being certain, and what you believe, you become. Negative beliefs and thoughts place a block on your concentration and memory. Unless you decide to take responsibility and change the thoughts that you're constantly feeding yourself, you will not be able to break through your negative conditioning. Every single thought we have is creative. It has the power to build and the power to destroy. Most people don't realize that when they use doubtful phrases, they're setting standards for themselves. These standards become expectations, and in the end will become self-fulfilling prophecies. Here's an example of what happens with a negative belief frame. You'll start with something like, "I'm terrible with names." Then an expert says, "Here's the best method to improve your memory for names." You then say, "Sorry, it doesn't work for me." "Well, why not?" "Well, because I told you I'm terrible with names." Your limiting belief will keep you trapped in a loop. Your mind will keep looping and prevent you from learning anything new. Your beliefs either move you or stop you. In brief, every thought and every word works for you or against you, and every thought that you confirm to be true multiplies and becomes a belief. When you change a belief, you change a mental construction, and therefore, your life. In other words, we believe what we've been taught to believe, and we don't question beliefs because we don't want to question the source. Begin to ask yourself, who will I be doubting by changing my beliefs about my mind, concentration, and memory, and why do I think this is true? People tend to think that their beliefs are absolutely true, but these beliefs are only true for them. Just because you can't do something well doesn't mean it's impossible. Identify your self-limiting beliefs and then ask, what if they were not true at all? And remember, the limits in your belief system will always stop you from seeing any alternatives that should be obvious. If you choose to change your beliefs, here's how you can do it. First, 80% of changing anything is about why you want to change, and only 20% is about how you do it. Take responsibility. It's as simple as having a reason and making a decision that you want to change your beliefs. Second, question the belief. There are some things that you previously believed with all your heart, but now you don't believe them. Why? Because you questioned them. If, long ago, some teacher told you that you have a memory like a sieve, it doesn't mean you have to make the teacher's words true or a reality. You were younger then, had less experience, and did not have the ability to question authority. Now, with age comes the advantage that you can question his or her judgment of your younger self. Ask yourself questions like, how much is this belief going to cost me if I hold on to it? Do I have to hold on to it? Is it true? Can I be 100% certain that it is the truth? Third, create a new belief and think of experiences, research, and thoughts to confirm it. When you change your beliefs, you allow yourself to experience more of your potential and create new possibilities. Fourth, use the new belief often and make it part of your identity. Your beliefs are only the stories that you've accepted to be true about yourself. Just decide to change the stories. Spencer Lord said, "Beliefs are not tattoos, they're just like clothes. You can put them on and take them off at will." Thus, here are 5 core beliefs that you can put on right now. Number 1, I was born with exceptional concentration and memory. You are already all you need to be. Maxwell Maltz said, "Do not tolerate for a minute the idea that you're prohibited from any achievement by the absence of inborn talent or ability. This is a lie of the grandest order, an excuse of the saddest kind. You don't need anything more. You don't need a special talent or pill to have brilliant concentration or a great memory. All you need is a willingness to learn, a method, and self-discipline. Number two, memory improvement is important. Successful people believe that what they do is important and worth doing. With this belief, people move from interest into commitment. Consider living without your memory for 1 week. You wouldn't be capable of doing anything. Everything you do, say, and understand is due to memory. It's your most important mental function. And if you improve it, you'll improve your life. Number three, I have incredible abilities. My memory is unlimited. Think about how much data you already have stored in your memory. Numbers, stories, jokes, experiences, words, names, and places. Think about what an incredible memory you need to just have a conversation. You have to listen, create meaning from what you've just heard, and then search your memory for a response. Not even all the computers in existence connected to each other can perform such a feat. You'll see your incredible ability once you have learned the memory methods. Number four, there is no failure, only feedback. Catch your memory doing things right. One of the best ways to strengthen this belief is to ask yourself, how does my memory serve me? How did it serve me today? Generally, people only focus on where their memory went wrong, therefore making it weaker. Focus on your strengths and change your approach when the feedback or result is not what you want. And number five, I don't know it all. Thinking you know everything there is to know about something is really not a useful place to be because it prevents you from learning anything new. Listen and become interested in other points of view and embrace change as well as new things. Allow information to come to you. Open all channels to receive information. Decide now that you will only feed your mind with good. Adopt and try on as many empowering beliefs as you can. Use them and watch your life take on a new direction. Take action now. Identify your self-limiting beliefs. Question these beliefs and ask yourself, is it I can't improve my concentration and memory? Or is it I won't make the time to improve my concentration and memory? What else do you believe about your mind and your potential? Memorize this quote by Jim Rohn. If you don't like how things are, change it. You're not a tree. Chapter 4. Be here now. Concentrate all your thoughts on the task at hand. The sun's rays do not burn until brought to a focus. Alexander Graham Bell. We are all gifted. Gifted with the power to think about our thinking. You can focus your thinking to improve any area of your life. You're in control of what you choose to attend to. You can continue to allow your attention to be pulled by your environment, or you can decide now to direct it. Many people believe super concentration is a magical state with which only a lucky few are born. For instance, do you agree with this statement? Big muscular biceps are something you're born with? No, of course not. Because we all know it takes many hours of training in a gym. Yet people look at attention as something you have or don't have. Concentration, like anything in life, takes practice. Concentration is made up of many small choices consistently practiced. Every day, brain research is telling us that the brain is consistently changing when we learn something new. The people that limit their attention are still using the "your brain can't change" model. We know that concentration can and should be improved. You have everything in you now to take control of your bouncing monkey mind and to take your power back. Here's the average person's daily attention training. They wake up in the morning, not peacefully, usually to some loud song or blaring alarm clock. They check their mobile phone for any messages just to see if anyone missed them. Then they jump out of bed and into the shower, and there they think about 110 things that they need to worry about or need to do. Unfortunately, they haven't allowed themselves enough time to get ready and can only manage a small unhealthy breakfast and fill up with coffee. They get in their car, put the radio on, make phone calls, or even try to text message into traffic. They get all angry and they get all worked up about the traffic. The traffic is there and won't change. Yet they think it should change. In fact, we worry and focus our attention on a million things which can all wait for the appropriate time. But we allow our attention to be pulled in different directions. Imagine your attention was an Olympic athlete. Would your athlete be able to be competitive? The reason our attention and focus isn't that great is because we haven't trained it. We keep on switching through the channels of our mind and never stop long enough on one specific channel. We pay attention half-heartedly on almost everything we do these days. We live in an activity illusion and think that busyness is equal to good business. Busyness may make you feel good and make you think that you're more productive, but when we look back at the end of the day, we realize we haven't done anything worthwhile. We're training our minds to have continuous partial attention, and our attention is being fragmented. Training your concentration isn't that hard. You just have to learn to become more peaceful and find the moment. You have to learn to be here, now. When you're at work, be at work. When you're at home, be at home. Learn to be silent. Let your quiet mind listen and absorb, said Pythagoras. We fill our minds up with all kinds of conflict, and this takes us away from the moment. Have you ever had a fight with someone at home, then go to work, and the whole day you can't concentrate? Conflict pulls your mind in many directions. When you fill your mind with conflict, your mind will be all over the place. Conflict is the opposite of concentration. When you're peaceful, you enjoy the moment, and your mind becomes like a laser beam. Peace and concentration are the same thing. There are four areas that you need to focus on to eliminate conflict and create more peace in your mind. Number one, take control of your inner voice. Do you have a little voice that talks to you in your head? If you're not sure, you're probably asking yourself, do I have a little voice or don't I? We all have a little voice, and it has a huge influence on our concentration and our lives. You're constantly talking to yourself, but the only problem is that you catch yourself doing things wrong. Start to catch yourself doing more things right. How or where did you concentrate well today? In what area of your life do you need to stop beating yourself up? Your inner voice has the ability to offer instructions, so instruct yourself well. It's the center of your focus of control that helps you explain and make sense of your world. Don't agree with the wrong voices. All self-hatred and conflict is just a thought or a little voice, so change the thought. It's not set in stone. Remember, if you give yourself bad commands, then bad things will happen. Number two, stop multitasking. We destroy our concentration by multitasking the moment and our peace away. Multitasking is a myth. If you watch a lioness hunting in the wild, she'll focus on one wildebeest. She never focuses on two, because she knows the odds of missing both are stacked against her. She is single-minded and does everything in her power to achieve her goal. In the circus, when they train lions, they put a chair in front of their face to control their behavior. This confuses the lion and divides their attention. Now they have four chair legs to focus on, and they go into a type of trance. We humans are the same. Our brain can really only focus on one thing at a time. It's impossible to focus on two things at the same time. When you are multitasking, you're actually switching between tasks. You're always semi-attending, and it's not very effective. We cannot do more than one thing well at a time. It has become one of the most damaging myths out there. We are training our brains to have an attention deficit. A lot of people cannot focus for an extended period of time anymore. I've heard that the average person looks at their mobile phone about 50 times a day. We're reading emails, the news, Facebook, Twitter, etc. during what should be family and relationship time. People these days even drive while talking on a phone. Driving with a mobile phone makes you hit the brakes a half a second slower. If you're traveling at 112 kilometers per hour, in one half second you travel 15 and a half meters. Well, a lot can happen over that distance. If you're distracted in your car, you have a 9 times higher chance of having an accident. When your phone rings, you don't have to pick it up. That's why voicemail was invented. Neuroscience consultant Marilee Springer says, multitasking is known to slow people down by 50% and add 50% more mistakes. Multitasking is like putting your brain on drugs. There's a whole body of research that shows that multitasking is less productive, makes you less creative, and contributes to you making bad decisions. We're also not allowing ourselves to sit and enjoy the moment anymore. Blaise Pascal said, all man's miseries derive from not being able to sit quietly in a room alone. We get in the car, and we have to put the radio on. When we arrive home, we have to put the TV on. When we watch TV, we flip through the channels. We even lack enough attention to watch the commercials. We are constantly filling our minds with conflict. Most people allow their attention to be pulled in different directions. Very few people direct their attention. A lack of attention direction is the real disorder. Stop overwhelming yourself by continually changing the channels of your mind. Sharpen up your intellect by returning to the habit of doing one thing at a time. Rediscover the value of consecutive tasking, instead of settling for the quality dilution associated with simultaneous tasking. Exceptional work is always associated with periods of deep concentration. Nothing excellent ever comes from a scattered effort. When you're all there, your brain power and resources will be all there too. Number three, know what you want. When people approach information, they never really know what they want out of it. They don't direct their minds. Learn to engage and be present with the information by creating a strong PIC in your mind. PIC. That stands for purpose, interest, and curiosity. Purpose? Having a clear purpose is important because clarity dissolves resistance. Always remember why you're reading or learning the information. Keep your purpose at the forefront of your mind. If you don't know what you want, how are you going to know when you get it? Learning with a purpose increases your attention, comprehension, retention, and organizes your thoughts. The more specific the purpose, the more information you'll get. A vague purpose would be, I want to learn more about memory from this book. A specific purpose would be, I want to learn at least 6 key strategies that will enable me to improve my memory. Focus on getting information that you can use, and then put it into practice. As David Allen said, if you're not sure why you're doing something, you can never do enough of it. The eyes for interest. Your level of interest sets the direction of your attention and therefore your level of focus. If you're not interested, remembering what you read will be almost impossible. Whatever is highest on your interest level is where your mind is alert, disciplined, and focused. Whatever is lower on your interest list is where you hesitate and procrastinate. You can remember mountains of information when you're interested in the subject. It almost feels automatic and your concentration is at its peak. Your deficits of attention are mostly interest deficits. Your mind never wanders away. It only moves towards more interesting and outstanding things. We all know that interest improves concentration, but how do we get interested in the boring information? The first step is to find your interests and then to find links or connections between your interests and the new information that you're learning. For example, I'm interested in training and sharing knowledge with other people. When I read anything, I'm always searching for new information relating to my interest. When I read or listen through my interest filter, I'm focused and can concentrate. I always ask myself questions like, how does this connect to training? How is it going to improve my life? If I read or remember this, is it going to give me something that not many people know? Is it going to help me in the future? How does this material help me achieve my goals? In other words, all boring information can be made more interesting with the right mindset. Gilbert Chesterton said, there are no uninteresting things, only uninterested people. So get interested. The final part of PIC and getting your mind more involved is curiosity. Questions are the answer to improving curiosity. Before you start reading or learning anything, ask yourself motivational questions. Most people ask questions that don't move them to take action. They look at the book and say things like, why do I have to read this book? This is too much to read. This looks really boring. If you ask questions like that, how much energy are you going to have to learn? You want to ask energy-enhancing questions that get you engaged in the information. Ask yourself, how is this relevant and applicable to my life right now? How will this information help me achieve my goals? How can I apply this information to improve my work? How will this help me? How will this information make me more significant? Get curious about your mind and how it works. Tony Robbins says, if you want to cure boredom, be curious. If you're curious, nothing is a chore. It's automatic. You want to study. Cultivate curiosity and life becomes an unending study of joy. And the last way to create more peace is to, number four, eliminate worry. Imagine one day you woke up and you didn't have to worry. What would you feel like? You'd be peaceful. There'd be no thoughts moving through your mind, no thoughts sending stress emotions through your system. Imagine waking up and you didn't have to run or control other people's behaviors or control the government with your thinking. Imagine you didn't have to believe the latest fear rumor. Byron Katie says, I could only find 3 kinds of business in the world. Mine, yours, and God's. Whose business are you in? You become more relaxed when you decide to take up residence in your own mind and your own business. Life is easy when you simplify and make peace with your train of thought. When you believe you're bad thinking, you suffer. How many people, events, and things did you try to control with your mind today? Stay in your own mind and enjoy the laser-like energy of having a clear mind. You don't worry because you care. You worry because that's what you have learned to do. Worry is a very creative mental process. The questions you ask in your mind create your worries. If you ask what if questions, you set your mind up to worry. If you consistently ask, what if I lose my job? What if I crash my car? What if criminals attack me? All these what if phrases create movies in your mind that consistently loop different scenarios, which creates a state of worry. Rather, say to yourself, what would I do if I lost my job? What would I do if I crashed my car? These movies that are created by these questions don't loop you into worry. They give you action steps that direct your mind. Create a procedure for different scenarios and make peace with your thinking. Learn to practice peace, because if you have no attention, you have no retention. Most people swing from one emotional extreme to the other. Concentration is about learning how to stay centered. When you concentrate your power, you can achieve anything. Imagine your mind was a torch. Most people allow their torch to jump and shine all over the place. You want your torch to stand still and shine brightly. Nothing outside of you is going to fix your concentration. It's an inside job. You need to make a decision today. Do you want to improve your concentration, or don't you? It's always up to you. Therefore, eliminate your excuses, clean up your beliefs, and be here now. Part 2. Create and connect. When you train your creativity, you automatically train your memory. When you train your memory, you automatically train your creative thinking skills. That's a quote from Tony Buzan. And it begins chapter 5, Bring Information to Life. Another quote from Mark Victor Hansen. Your mind is the greatest home entertainment center ever created. Many people dream of having a photographic memory. They define it as the ability to take a quick mental picture of information, without effort, and then describe it in detail from memory. In this case, your mind would be like a camera taking photos of anything you need to know. Unfortunately, all perfect memory takes some conscious effort, and photographic memory is a myth. Memory is a creative process and not a photographic process. Many people who are thought to have a photographic memory are just using all the methods that you'll learn in this book on some or other level. If you take these methods into your life, you'll be tapping into your natural memory power too. Perfect memory is a skill and not some special gift. Have you ever had this experience? You're in an exam, and you know exactly what page the information is on, but you don't know what is on the page. Or you're reading something, and you get to the bottom of the page, and you think to yourself, what have I just read? The reason this happens is because you never brought the information to life. Think about it. What happens when you read a novel or a story? You make a kind of movie in your mind, don't you? You can remember all the names of the characters, places, and events because you can see it, and you're creating pictures all the time while reading. You're using your imagination and your natural creative ability. However, when people start to learn textbook material, they try to make a mental photograph, a recording of the page, but leave their creative abilities out of the learning process. People that learn quickly or have a so-called photographic memory apply their creativity to everything they learn. They may have either learned how to do this in the past or they've been using the principles naturally and unconsciously. Most people try to remember information with their sense of sound. They repeat the information over and over again, hoping it will somehow stick. Sound is very limited because it doesn't attach easily to other memories. A sound is also always sequential. If you want to remember something with sound, you have to start at the beginning and work your way through the information. However, when you see information as an image in your mind, you can jump in and out of the information, and therefore improve your understanding too. Any book that you really enjoy normally activates your imagination and brings the information to life. You naturally get engaged in the book and you battle to put it down because you don't want to turn the movie off. Your mind is like an internal movie screen on which you can ask it to produce information. This is how we think and learn effectively. Your brain creates miracles every day by converting lifeless information into pictures and ideas. When you become aware of this, every word becomes a picture drawn with letters because words are only symbols of three-dimensional images. Arthur Gordon said, "Isn't it amazing how we take them for granted? Those little black marks on paper, 26 different shapes known as letters, arranged in endless combinations known as words, lifeless until someone's eyes fall on them." If your brain was unable to make images out of symbols, all learning and reading would be worthless and incredibly boring. Your brain likes pictures, and we are really good at remembering them. As neuroscientist John Medina says, hear a piece of information and 3 days later you'll remember 10% of it. Add a picture and you'll remember 65%. Some people say, I can't make pictures in my mind. We all make pictures in our mind. If you were unable to create or remember visual images, you'd be severely handicapped. Learn to use your imagination. It's a learned skill and not a natural talent. Reading and understanding is also a creative imagination process. It's a power that can be compared to magic. We succeed in this area when we produce images in our mind. When we don't, we feel confused or ignorant. If I tried to explain to you how a car engine works, but you don't know what an engine looks like, or if I didn't have one for you to look at or a drawing to represent it, it would be really difficult to understand. The more we turn information into images or mind movies, the more we'll remember and comprehend. We can learn to make all our learning more creative and memorable if we use our unlimited imagination. You can learn to enhance your memory imagination system by making your mind movies exciting and sticky. The way to do this is with the C principle. The C principle stands for senses, exaggeration, and energize. Use your S, senses. There are only 5 ways to get anything into your brain, and that's through sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. When you utilize your senses, you experience more of life and you remember more. Our senses help us mentally recreate our world. If you train your senses, you'll be using more of your brain. And if you learn to engage as many of your senses as you can, then you'll automatically improve your memory. Think of a horse. See it in your mind. Touch it. Smell it. Hear it. Even taste it. You didn't see the letters H-O-R-S-E in your mind. You saw a multisensory picture of what the word represents. Your senses make mind movies real and memorable. Use them. The E is for exaggeration. What's easier to remember, a strawberry that's normal size or one the size of a house? Make your images larger or smaller than life. What's more memorable, an elephant or an elephant wearing a pink bikini? Exaggerate with humor. Tickle your mind. There's no scientific evidence to prove that learning should be serious. Make your images illogical. Have fun. Create some positive, exaggerated learning memories. And the other E in C is for energize. Give your pictures action. Would you rather watch a movie of your holiday or a slideshow? What creates more feeling in your imagination? A horse standing still or a horse that's running and moving? Make your information vivid, colorful, and not boring, flat, and black and white. Use action. It brings life to your memories. Make your images act in illogical ways. You can weave, crash, stick, or wrap things together. We can make things talk, sing, and dance. Think about the great genius Walt Disney. The process of imagination is a fun, creative process. The more enjoyment you can put into it, the better. When you're reading or hearing something, focus on all the C principles and imagine it as a movie. Even if you don't use a specific method that you'll learn in this book, the C principles will improve your concentration. Emile Kyu pointed out that when the imagination and the will are in conflict, the imagination always wins. If you will yourself to remember and your imagination is not on the task, you'll have zero retention and recall. Your imagination is the place of all your memory power. Some people say, this is not the way that I naturally think. This is not the way that I naturally think either. This is how I've taught myself to think. Because it works. The more skilled you become in using your imagination, the more you can know, comprehend, and create. In this way, you become the director of your own mind. How do I turn abstract information into images? We remember nouns and adjectives with ease because they have meaning, and we can make a mental picture without much effort. Most abstract words can be made to mean something. Just use a meaningful thought or word to represent a meaningless word. Find a word or phrase that sounds the same or similar to the abstract word, or you can break a word up into its individual sounds. Imagine you had to remember the name Washington. You could turn that word into a picture of you washing a tin. Or if you had to remember the word hydrogen, you could use a picture of a fire hydrant drinking gin. You can turn all complex information into something meaningful and memorable by turning it into images. In the beginning, it'll take a bit of effort on your part. You'll have to invest your attention at first, and then it'll become a habit. To practice, look at words, break them up, make a picture, and give it all more meaning. Let's learn a few foreign words for practice. Really imagine each word and create a see mini mind movie. First, we'll use Spanish words. Tiger is tigre. It sounds like tea gray. Imagine a tiger drinking his tea that has turned gray. Sun is sol. Imagine that the sun is burning the sole of your one foot. Arm is braccio. Imagine a bra is sewn into your arm. Some Italian words. Chicken is polo. You can imagine playing polo with a chicken instead of a ball. Cat is gatto. Imagine to your friend, you've got to hold my cat. Some French words. Book is libre. Sounds like liver, so you can imagine opening a book and finding squashed liver inside. Hand is main. My main hand is my right hand. Chair is share. Imagine you have chairs in a chair. Some Zulu words. Dog is inja. Think of an injured dog. Floor is pansy. Imagine a pansy growing out of the floor. Snake is inyoka. Imagine a snake slithering in your car. Some Japanese words. Chest is mune. Imagine money growing out of your chest. Door is toe. Imagine you're kicking the door with your big toe. Carpet is jutan. Imagine you are tanning on a big carpet. Or you tan on a carpet. Test yourself. What's the Spanish word for tiger? What's the Italian word for cat? What's the Zulu word for dog? What's the Japanese word for chest? What is the French word for book? The Italian word for chicken? What's the Zulu word for snake? The French word for hand? What's the Japanese word for carpet? Just by connecting these words in a silly mind movie, you've learned 14 foreign words. You can use this method to remember hundreds of foreign words if you use the C principle. Remember, you're only connecting two concepts at a time. If you imagine it for a few seconds, it'll stick in your memory, and it'll be easy to recall if you need it. You can even use this method to remember all the countries and capitals. You just need to bring the information to life. The capital of Australia is Canberra. You can imagine a kangaroo, represents Australia, eating a can of berries, Canberra, and the two will stick together to make it more memorable. The capital of Greece is Athens. Imagine eight hens, which sounds like Athens, swimming in Greece. The capital of Madagascar is Antananarivo. Imagine a mad gas car crashing into your friend Anne, who is tanning, on a river. The capital of Belgium is Brussels. Imagine Brussels sprouts falling out of a bell, doing gym, Belgium. Make a silly picture and really see it, and you could remember all the capitals with ease. The greatest secret of a powerful memory is to bring information to life with your endless imagination. Take responsibility for your memory. You can only learn to control your memory when you become the source of your imagination. Memory is not a thing that happens to you. You create your memories. You can make any information into something more meaningful. When we start using the memory systems, you'll see how easy it is to convert abstract information into meaningful concepts. Using all these memory methods improves your creativity, enhances your memory, and your humor, too. Chapter 6. Use your car to remember. Making the simple complicated is commonplace. Making the complicated simple, awesomely simple, that's creativity. That's a quote from Charles Mingus. We have just learned to bring information to life by turning information into pictures or mind movies. Now we need to learn to create files for pictures from our long-term memory. This will assist us in remembering new information. These systems require you to think differently. I always think it's amazing how people want to improve their memory and concentration, but they do more of the same thing and expect a different result. You have to do different to become different. The method that I'll share with you now is called the car method. Our car is a great long-term storage compartment because we know it well and can easily navigate it in our mind. With this method, as with all of them, I want you to see the images in your mind. Remember, every word in any language is only a picture drawn with letters. Get rid of your excuses like, I'm not creative or I don't think like this. This isn't how I think either. This is how I've trained myself to think. Because it works. These methods may seem silly, but just go with it. I promise that you'll see the point and you'll remember the information. These systems take long for me to explain, but they work at the speed of thought. The only reason it won't work for you is if you don't do it. You're going to use nouns for this exercise because they're easy to imagine and therefore easier to control and store. Then, in the second exercise and the rest of the book, we'll use more abstract information. Follow the images in your mind and let's see how much you remember. See your car in your mind, and imagine you squeeze a big apple into the front grid of your car. Take a carrot and stab it into the bonnet or hood of the car. On the windscreen or windshield, see grainy bread and think to yourself, "The grainy bread is going to damage my windshield wipers." Get inside your car and squash dried fruit on the dashboard. Really see it go into your speedometer. On the driver's seat, imagine you're sitting on blueberries and strawberries. Really feel it. Throw eggs at the person sitting in the passenger seat next to you. They now have egg on their face. Imagine you're pouring thousands of nuts and seeds into your back seat. Go outside your car and imagine a massive orange on your roof. You open the boot or trunk and it's full of fish. Really smell the fish. In the exhaust pipe, there's broccoli and Brussels sprouts growing out of the exhaust. And finally, the tires of your car are made out of sweet potatoes. Sweet. Go through your car from the beginning to the end and see if you can remember all the information. If a word didn't stick, go back. Make the connection stronger and see it more clearly in your mind. What you've just learned are 14 superfoods, foods that have been shown to improve your vitality and keep your mind agile and alert. Not only do you know the list forwards, but you also know it backwards and inside out. What's on the roof? What are the car tires made of? What was on the driver's seat? What was on the bonnet of the car? Your mind automatically makes the connection and answers the question for recall. Now that you really know it, it's easier to use and think about. Some people say, "But now I have to remember the car, too. You're giving me more to remember." That's not true. With all of the systems, you'll be using something that's already in your memory. In fact, you're using all of the unused space in your long-term memory. You remembered the entire list and with ease. Now, why does this system work so well? If you throw water into a sieve, it goes in and straight through. If you put a packet into the sieve, the water will get trapped. Your memory works in the same way. Your long-term memory, things that are in your memory forever, like your name and what your house looks like, etc., is like the packet that can be used to trap short-term information. New information coming in, like a new telephone number. When you've managed to do that, you make a strong medium-term memory. With the car list, your whole car is in your long-term memory. Long-term memory offers you a place to store the information. The locations in the car become storage compartments for the short-term memories. All the memory methods work with my formula. Long-term memory plus short-term memory equals medium-term memory. These methods also organize information, therefore making it easier to find. The more order you put into a subject, the easier it will be to remember. The secret to accelerated learning is superior organization. We can use other cars to remember other new information, too. In the audio companion document, you'll find a picture of a car with 7 images on it. It shouldn't conflict with the food car because it opens up a new memory file. Look at the picture in the companion document and make sure that you can clearly recreate the whole image in your mind. Break the images down. Look at each place and make sure that each one sticks to its place. Have you done that? Good. What you've just learned are Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. By remembering all 7 images, you're creating points of reference within your mind for each of the habits. When you have it in your memory, it will be easier to gauge if you're living the 7 habits. When you mentally look at the car, you'll instantly be able to recall all the information. Remember, the more you know, the easier it is to get to know more. Let me explain each of those pictures. The 7 habits are as follows. Habit number 1, be proactive. I thought of a bee that's a pro golfer. That picture should be enough to trigger habit number 1. Habit number 2, begin with the end in mind. The brain is running a race and looking at the end in mind. Habit 3, put first things first. The man is in first position, putting first things first. Habit number 4, think win-win. The 2 trophies show that everyone wins with win-win. Habit 5, seek first to understand, then to be understood. The man under the umbrella will stand up. Habit number 6, synergize. Sign balanced on the edge with eyes. Sharpen the saw is habit number 7 on the tire of the car. With your memory, always use as few pictures as possible to remember as much as possible. The more simple and clear it is, the less you'll feel overwhelmed.